What up, dog?
What's that dude?
You about to look very little. What's up, bro?
I'm trying to run down the pipe to tackle that. What's up, baby?
You good?
Good to see you.
Fred.
And Fred's a big man.
Bro,
that dude's a monster.
I just showed him the photo. It was September
28, 2012. Yup. Towering over your ass.
Yuli versus Glaze Day. Yeah. My son KT, that was KT's birthday. And he had just got the state rushing record. Emmett sent him a ball and all of that. So he's excited. I get to go up against Derrick Henry. They say he the best. I think I'm the best. Who's going to go to what school? He had 360 on 30-something carries and 6 touchdowns. KT had like 222 on 30-something touchdowns. They blew him out 42-6. KT was hot. He was hot, man. It's been a while.
It's been a while.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Nigga stomach cap in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Man, welcome to the pivot, man. Appreciate Congratulations,
it.
Too, brother.
Appreciate it, bro.
Congratulations
Thank you.
To you, man. Freddie T, Chan, I'm RC. Bro, we've been trying to get it done.
I know.
For a long time. It took him to not be a Tennessee Titan anymore. to actually want to do it, man. And it was Freddie T talking about your high school stats and, you know, things that you were able to do. Your high school was actually poo before you went there, though.
Yeah, we wasn't good. And then it wasn't, because I think it first opened in, like, I want to say, like, 06 probably, maybe 08. One of my biggest cousins was the first class to graduate from the high school. So it was like fairly new, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was just on the up and up. So they didn't really have, you know, much people, because usually, like, people from my hometown, like my dad growing up and my aunts and cousins, they went to Fernie and the Beach, which was across the bridge, because we didn't have a high school. And then they built one in 08. And I was kind of sodding, because I had a cousin that went to Bowles and he won state. And I was like, I want to do what he did. He played running back. So I was going back and forth. Then I got to Bowles and I took that test to be able to see if I can get in. I was like, no, I'm going to go to Yulee. I'm straight. I'm like, no.
You would drive from Yulee to Jacksonville to go to Bowles?
Well, yeah, I was going to do that because my cousin did that. His dad used to take him from Yulee to Bowles his whole high school career. And then once he went there and he did what he did, I always go to his games. They went to state, won state, and you know, he went off to college. I was like, man, I want to do the same thing. Because he used to have us running on the beach, doing all type of stuff. We was jits, we was little. So whenever I got a chance to go play when I got to high school, I was like, I might want to try out and see if I can make it. But when they gave me that test, I was like, no, I'm going to stay home.
How far was that ride?
That's probably like a 25-minute ride.
Yeah.
Every single day?
Every single day.
30 both ways?
Every single day.
Y'all had to make that because you wanted to make it. Like, that was the path to make it.
Yeah, my cousin, when he started going to his dad to take him, and then once he, you know, got acquainted and started going to school, teammates, classmates, I think some of them used to come pick him up and, like, oh, he'll stay the night at one of their houses and then didn't go to school. But, yeah, they used to make that ride.
Also, too, I didn't introduce you. I should have said former offensive player of the year, second all-time Tennessee Titans rushing leader, greatest running back of this era, and now Baltimore Raven, Derrick Henry. I do want to start the big news or the big thing out of the first press conference was obviously the purple suit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you mentioned that it was your grandmother's favorite color. You hadn't worn it since she passed in 2016. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned seeing a butterfly for the first time in Dallas.
Crazy.
You know, and your grandmother also loved butterflies.
Yeah.
You know, that story has been told. The story I'm more interested in, because Fred talks about his grandmother all the time as well, why was being able to represent your grandmother on that day of such a transition and have something so familiar to hold close important to you because of what she was to you?
We were going back and forth on the phone with the Ravens, and we finally came to an agreement. They were like, can you come out like the next day and do a press conference on Thursday? I'm like, oh man, I thought it was gonna be like a week, but I forgot that free agency was like that Wednesday. So then the Ravens purple, I'm like, oh, I got the perfect suit I can wear, because they want to wear a suit. I was like, I got the perfect suit I can wear that I wore to my grandmother's funeral. But we in the process of moving. We just bought a new house. We about to move to a new house. Everything in boxes, and I had some stuff in storage just because so our house wasn't crowded until we moved to the new house. I'm like, I got to find that suit. I don't know where it's in storage, but I gotta figure out how to find it in storage. So whenever we figured out we got everything planned, I went to my storage, and I'm moving everything out the way, trying to find it, moving stuff. The storage looked crazy right now. It was organized, but not as crazy, but I was able to find it. And I wanted to wear it to honor her, because I can always remember sitting on her porch, because that's what we used to do in the morning time. Whenever she'd get up, like 6 o'clock in the morning, have her coffee, and I'd ask questions about my dad, all my cousins, everybody who was raised in that house, how they all were brought up. And I asked her one day, I was like, Grandma, what's your favorite color? She was like, violet purple. So I knew I was gonna be a Raven, that purple. I was like, it's a perfect match. And I was happy that I was still able to fit it. It fit pretty right. It was still a little tight when I put it on, but I just feel like it was a cool story and a cool connection, being able to play on a team that has purple, and that was her favorite color. So I just wanted to, you know, honor her by telling that story. And then the butterfly situation, I mean, it's a true story. I mean, we were outside, my daughter liked playing outside in the yard, and we just sitting there chilling. I had a game on the TV on the back patio. She wanted to kick the soccer ball, and I was kicking the soccer ball, and I just stopped and I was watching her run. And out of nowhere, a butterfly just started flying all around me. We ain't seen no butterflies around there at all since I've been living there. But like I said, in Tennessee, every practice I would see a butterfly. Anytime I went out to practice, I'd see one fly. Then I told my coaches, then they start paying attention to it, and they would see one every practice. But at that particular moment, you know, right before free agency started, you know, because it can get a little hectic, you know, you can get kind of overwhelmed because you don't know what's going to happen, how long it's going to take, or where you're going to end up. But once I seen that butterfly, I was like, man, I'm good. Ain't no reason to be overreacting. Ain't no reason to be worried about nothing, because where I'm supposed to be, I'll be. And she was just a reminder of that.
Like, everybody knows what you do, bro. Yeah. Like, you came in with the cutoff sleeves and all. You know? We know you're a big-ass dude, but why was Baltimore the place? Because there were all the teams who want you to run the ball for them.
Yeah.
Why did you choose Baltimore?
When we did the presser, like Eric DaCosta said, they actually tried to trade for me, like during the season when the trade deadline was going on. And during the whole process, you know, I was just waiting. I'm seeing rumors, like just seeing that all type of stuff going on. So I'm like, I don't know what's gonna happen. So I'm telling my girl, I'm like, I could possibly be traded the next week, next couple of days, because they had traded Kevin Byard. I'm like, I'm gonna be out here. They trade KB. Like, they're gonna ship me out. And I was talking to my agent. You know, they really sound interested. Like, they really want me to come there and come in, try to make an impact. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, it felt like it was genuine. They really wanted me. So, but when it fell through, you know, and I ended up finishing the season, and then free agency started, I was like, I mean, they're gonna be number one on my radar, because, you know, they showed me showing love since the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And I knew once free agency started that, you know, I want to work something out if we could. You know, even though I'm living in Dallas, and I talked to you about it, you know, Dallas been a perfect situation as well, because we lived there, we ain't got to move. But at the same time, you know, Ravens, the history of it, and then talking to Ray at the Pro Bowl, just like, you know, his passion about the organization, his impact there, and, you know, how he talk about it, I was just like, man, that's somewhere, if I'm not in Tennessee or I don't get to go to Dallas, I'd love to be a Raven. And I'm glad it worked out. I mean, Lamar, that's no question.
Yum, yum. Yum, yum. We talked about it last night, bro. Yeah. That shit, when you going across, bro, come on now.
Say Flowers, he had a great year. We know what Mark Andrews bring. Mm-hmm. Offensive line, solid. I mean, they lost a couple guys, but I'm sure they'll, you know, find some guys in free agency or draft people or the people that the players already have there to fill in. And then 4-2, big Pat. No, we had them on film. We highlight him, you know, we watching film before they play him. So I'm excited to you know, be playing with him as well. He a beast, you know.
Hey, that backfield's gonna have him and a 300-pound fullback in Patrick McCarr. That's gonna be like, I don't want to make you weigh too much. How much you weigh?
Like right now, I'm probably like 250.
550 yards in the backfield.
2 feet.
2 feet. But it's a no-brainer, because like even like when I was in Tennessee and we was doing, I'd always be like, like, who the number one team, who the number one rushing team in the league? Yeah. In Baltimore, I'm like, ah, league, yeah. So we can never get over that hump. So I'm like, for me to be able to join that, it's like a no-brainer.
Right.
Like, feel me? That's what they do. That's the bread and butter. So, you know, I just want to be adding piece to it and, you know, see where it takes us. But
was Dallas ever, like, really in the heavy thick of the mix? Or you decided not to go because you weren't going to get 22?
No, they ain't holler at me at all.
For real?
Bro, that was the rumor.
That was a big rumor. Then they got, well, much like Mike did for CeeDee, mm-hmm. I believe Emmitt would have unretired 22, you know, and given it to someone. Like you said, if you're a Florida boy, all that other good stuff that come with it. I think it would have been crazy to see you in a Dallas uniform.
Yeah, it would have been crazy. I mean, I thought, you know, it would have been some type of reach out, some type of, you feel me, talks of whatever, but they never reached out, you know what I'm saying? I don't know too much about the organization, you know, mm-hmm. all I know is what I hear. And I was talking to my agent, they weren't really interested, which, you know, I was just like, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, I'm gonna be where I'm meant to be, and I feel like Baltimore was the perfect spot for me, so.
Let's go back to Florida real quick. I mentioned Yulee, population like 14,000.
Yeah.
How did your early childhood and, you know, your family, how did that shape your football experience and your life experience?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day. I owe my family a lot, really, because growing up, I ain't never have a job, and I ain't really need to have one because I was always in sports. It was football season, I was doing football. It was baseball, I was doing baseball, basketball, and then for so on. And if my grandmother had 14 kids, 12 girls, 2 boys. My dad was the last kid and the last boy. She nicknamed me Shaka because she was shocked that my dad was having a baby at the age of 16, and he was so young. My mom was 16 as well. So all my aunts, my dad's sisters, his older cousins, they all played a big part in my life by making sure I had everything I needed. Never had to want for anything. We ain't have much, but what we had, you know, we worked hard for it. And that's what I always, you know, fall back on whenever it's hard times, because I see my aunts, my mom, my dad, my grandmother do it for so long. And, you know, Yulee was a small town, so, you know, if I needed a ride anywhere, you know, it was somebody right there at, you know what I'm saying, at each corner. So, yeah, man, my family just played a big part of, you know, my success and, you know, me playing sports and falling in love with football and all the success I had to be focused on that and not to worry about nothing else.
Your daddy was wide open.
Yeah.
He said he got locked up 20 times, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing,
yeah,
and you and your brothers and sisters, their parents, their moms, or whatever. Yeah. Like, what was that like, dealing with that, and then now being a star, being who you are? Tell the story of what that was, what that felt like.
Yeah.
Young, yeah. And then now being the star and having to deal with it.
I was a grandma's boy coming out the womb, so my daddy's always get on to me. Anything that we did together, I tell my grandma, he like, man, stop telling your grandma everything. But I was a grandma's boy, so that's what it was. But my dad is a big part of me playing football, because anything I wanted to play, he was gonna pay for it. Any game I had, he was coming to. Never really missed any game but me growing up, no matter what he had going on. And at the time, you know, I didn't understand, but my dad was just trying to do everything he can to survive and provide for his kids and provide for me. But I tell you one thing, any game, any Pop Warner game, any baseball game, he was there. He signed me up. He was always in my life. And, you know, I appreciate my dad for everything, because anytime my mind to waver anyway, when I got to college, he was like, man, you can do what you want to do. You can do it. You still got time. And, you know, no matter what go on, you know, just fall back on what you know is working hard. And then eventually everything can happen for you. When you're a kid, you don't really understand what's going on. You don't really know the whole logistics of it. But at the same time, you know, I knew my dad loved me. I knew my dad would do anything for me. And, you know, now being older now, he was just hustling and trying to make ends meet to provide for what he needed to provide for.
Derek, as a father now, and, you know, you became a father when you were established. You had a job. You understood different things. You ever think about how hard it had to be for your parents being teenagers and having a child so young?
Definitely, because, you know, once I got that age, my mom would be like, you better not, don't do what me and your dad did, you know. You know, I know everything worked out, but it was hard, you know, and we was blessed because I had aunts, my grandmother stepped up, to help raise me. So, you know, they always told me to be careful the older I got. And then when I move on to college, just, you know, be smart, make the right decisions, and be around the right people. And, you know, now having a child now and being at the age of 26, having my first one, and being able to have money and be able to provide, it's still hard. Mm-hmm. So that's why I always tell people, like, back in the days, you know, you think life hard now, but look at back then, they didn't really have much, but made worth of what they had and still provided. And, you know, not even knowing how much our family was struggling or what they was going through, they always made sure we was okay, mm-hmm. no matter what. And, you know, I always tell anybody, my homeboys or my girl, anybody that I'm close with, like, you know, just look what your family did to get you to this point. And, you know, and it was never easy. So anytime a adverse situation present itself, shit, just get through it. You know what I'm saying? What don't break her, you know, make it. So
when you're a big time star, you know, you break the rushing record in Florida, which is extremely difficult in the sense that all the different stars that has come from that state, you go for 2,500, some kind of way 4,000 as a senior. I looked at the carries, bro.
Did you watch the video?
I looked at the carries as well, though. Your coach should be in jail.
Bro, did you watch the video?
Yeah, but they gave him the football 462 times.
I had the ball like 57 times in one game.
Yeah, I know.
I knew where the ball was going pre-snap. We ain't throwing no fades.
Bro, the thing so crazy is, like, after games, like, my coach would be looking crazy. He'd be like, "You all right?" I'm like, "What you mean?" He's like, "Are your body feel good? You feel good?" I'm like, "Yeah, coach, I'm straight." But at the time, I'm thinking, we winning. Yeah. I'm playing football, not thinking how crazy it is. And the older I get, I'm like, I carry the ball 57. Right. What the fuck? Tripping. Hey, but coach, we was winning, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah, but
see, like, coach is like, "Hey, man."
Right.
He's like, "This is what
Derrick
I know.
Left,
they don't
right.
want to tackle him 50 times.
Hey, we going to switch it up. We going to go Derrick Wright twice."
For a lot of reasons, too, you look at, you know, you hear things now that teams are saying. Why some team was kind of skittish and hesitant, maybe even the Cowboys, I don't know for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, they're questioning, you know, the amount of carries you had mm-hmm. in your lifetime, not just the NFL, but in high school, like mm-hmm. RC mentioned, in college, then in the NFL, what you've done, mm-hmm. you know, 500 yards away from 10,000. So I definitely shoot you a text when you cross that.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, club.
For sure.
I go ahead and give you love on that. But those are the questions. And you said in your press conference, just watch the show, you know, just check it out. Like, I'm going to be here. Is that motivation for you to go from one organization to the next and prove people that you still are the Heisman Trophy winner, Mr. 2,000 yard, Mr. Player of the Year just a couple years ago? Is that like just additional motivation? You still got it?
I love it, and I embrace it just because of the area of football we in now. It's not like the big backs. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, running back, you know, dependent like it used to be, like when y'all came up and, you know, y'all were killing the league, and it was just like running back after running back. And I was always a big running back fan, so I watched every single one of y'all. I grew up watching you being right, down the right, street. So right. I embrace it because I know people are just waiting to see when it's gonna be over. Like when I'm, you know what I'm saying, not gonna be mm-hmm. as dominant as I was to have the effect that I have. But
you just turned 30.
Yeah, I know what I'm saying. So yeah, I mean, I love it. And like I told him, I was like, this keep watching, because I'm going to keep working. As long as I can do this, I'm going to keep doing it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, even coming out of high school, you know, they thought I wasn't going to play running back in college. They thought I was going to go to defense, which goes say thought about defense. But I was going to be like, hell no, I wasn't going to do it. And then coming out of college, they didn't think I was going to make it long in the league. I was going to be a bust. Mm-hmm. Thought I was going to be a fullback and not have an effect in the league once I got here. And, you know, I've been still trying to prove myself, you know, ever since I stepped in the league. And that's the thing about it, is like, it don't matter what you did a year before, you still got to mm-hmm. prove that shit again.
Right.
And that's what I love about it. And it's a new challenge. And I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to work hard and then see what happens in September, like I said.
3,000 yards away from top 10 all time. Go get it.
Yes, sir. And that's crazy. That's crazy to say.
Were you born too late? Because I'm talking about LaDainian, who we played. LaDainian, Fred was a dog and all that. Like, when people leaned on the run game.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We're like,
yes.
Yo, big ass, bro, you big as hell. Like, I don't want to hit your ass. AP, played AP, different dudes like that. Yeah. Like, if you were born 10 years before, would you be better than, like, would you be more respected than you are now? Because running backs ain't respected like that. But for you to do what you're doing now, you're almost trying to bring that old school shit back.
And that's so crazy because whenever I was coming out of high school, and people was talking about position switch because how big I was and, you know, I'd be more effective on the defensive side. But I always fell back on watching LT, watching Freddie T, watching Ricky Williams, watching Eddie and James, watching AP, watching Priest Holmes, Jamal Lewis. Started watching NFL Network as a kid, got to see Eric Dickerson, and see he was kind of the same size. Seeing Earl Campbell run through people.
Jim.
Eddie George, watching the Titans and the Jaguars battle throughout them years. And I can go on and on because I watch every back. So whenever people would tell me I need to switch, I would fall back on that. I'm like, man, I'm going to be like them. Because that's what I fell in love with since a kid. So I was like, ain't nobody going to sway me from playing running back. That's what I want to do, and I'm going to be successful at it.
I just want to correct Channing really quick. Not all running backs are respected. He's certainly respected and feared on the field. In the front office, that's where the disrespect is.
Yeah.
By some coaching staff trying to create this by committee approach, they kind of disrespect the position. But what Derek brings to the table, he's still phenomenal. He's still going to make you put 8, sometimes 9 in the box. So in terms of respect, he still gets his respect on the field. And I think he's going to prove to everybody that he deserves
that. But football-wise, you got to throw 35 up now. You can't win no game at 20, bro.
But let me say some real shit, though. But if I ever have a son, my son ain't playing running back, though. You feel me? Like, you know, we want to take a stance for the guys who's already coming up and already in rotation to make it to the league and be able to, you know, set something up for them so when they come in the league and have opportunity to get paid, that they can get paid. But as far as my own son, no, he can't play running back.
Hey, D, you know, you mentioned that, though, and it brings me to a year ago in the offseason when Saquon was going through what he was going through. Jonathan Taylor was going through things, and all of you guys were trying, Nick Chubb, y'all were all trying to figure out a way to help running backs and sort of have some of those conversations to push the position forward. When you look at the way the position is viewed, what do you think the answer is, or is there no answer and teams are going to continue to disrespect the position?
I understand, you know, the whole thing behind it about running backs are replaceable and anybody can fill in the position, but I feel like when you got that guy, when you got that generational talent, then I feel like their respect needs to be there. Mm-hmm. Because all we seen growing up and coming up, want to play the position, all of us were inspired by somebody that played the position. Yep. And we saw whenever they were recognized as a generational talent, they got what they were due. Yeah. And we just want the same thing. And we know that kids that are looking up to us, and we want them to have to see that same thing and keep and continue that. But the game is changing, but at the end of the day, you still got to be able to run the football.
Yeah.
You still got to be able to run the football, and that's what gets the offense going. That's what opens up everything. And I feel like Christian's done a great job by doing that this year. Yeah. Saquon finally got paid. Josh got paid this year. And I feel like teams, like, they want to go away from it, but they still know you need a dog in that backfield to be able to have explosive offense and do what you want to do. So I was happy for them to see to get their share due, but at the same time, we just want our respect, and I feel like that's all we were trying to do last year when we was talking about it and putting light on it.
Yeah, it's just a leverage game, simple mathematics. Yeah. Going back to college, you were in Jacksonville. You say you watched me play. You knew I went to Florida.
Yeah.
why not UF? What influenced your decision to go to Bama first? And then I want to also talk about Nick Saban at some point.
Yeah, I was a Florida fan growing up. And, like, whenever I came out of high school, it was just like, once Urban left, and then whenever I was coming out of high school, Urban had left because they started recruiting me for a little bit. Mm-hmm. He ended up leaving, and then Muschamp took over.
Yeah.
And Dan Quinn was recruiting me. And you know, the whole recruit process was smooth. You know, I was rocking with Dan Quinn. He was cool as hell, and I was... I was visiting Florida a lot, and Charlie Weiss was the offensive coordinator at the time too. But I don't know. And then I was visiting Georgia, and I was visiting Bama, and I was visiting Tennessee. And I don't know, it was just like, I don't know, it just didn't feel like the foundation was laid and it was like set and it just didn't feel consistent, which I still stayed in contact with them throughout the process, but I was just like, I'm gonna see what else is out there. And I ended up committing to Georgia my junior year, because at the time, I think it was like me, John Theus at the time, who played offensive tackle at Bowles, Bryce Ramsey, who was a quarterback at Camden County, he was a quarterback there. And then Tramell Terry, I knew him from going to football camps, Nike camps. Me and him got close, and it was Trey Matthews, he played safety. And we was all there, and we all committed really at the same time. So I was like, man, I'm gonna be straight. I got my dogs, like we have a squad. And I was visiting there a lot. And then I was at Tennessee a lot too. Mm-hmm. I visit Tennessee. So I really want to play in the SEC, if y'all can see. So I want to play in the SEC. You know, when we watching games, I'm like, damn, Bama boy, they running. They running through people, like they going crazy. And it was just like, you could just see the takeover was happening. Like Coach Saban was getting dogs, and them boys were just balling. And then watching T. Rich being from Florida, being from Pensacola, I was like, damn, he from Florida, he doing that? Like, you know, sometimes you like, should I go too far away from home? But like, once I see him doing that, I'm like, man, I don't know. And then I end up decommitting from Georgia my senior year and opened my recruitment back up. And then after that, it was just like, I'm going to Bama. Because Coach Saban came to see me like my freshman year of high school. And then, you know, so he was recruiting me for a long time. So whenever I committed to Georgia, he was like, man, I didn't came to see you. I've been staying connected with you. Like, what's going on? I'm like, Coach, that's just what I wanted to do. But we end up, you know, we still stayed in contact, and I ended up committing, and I did an official visit to Bama and Tennessee, and ended up deciding to go to Bama.
A question about that though, right? I wasn't recruited like y'all, but you were committed to Georgia. Mm-hmm. You end up going to Bama, and you get to Bama, and you're a five-star, leading rusher of all time in high school football, but like you don't get there and become the guy. And you got homesick.
Yeah.
Was there ever a time, or how difficult was that time for you as a freshman in Alabama, and what made you stay?
Yeah, you know, what's so funny is when we were talking about the carries, 57 carries and all that, and really going to Bama was like my first time really having adversity in football. So like being young, not really understanding what's really going on, like COVID, like Coach Saban say, the process. So I wasn't really like, I didn't really understand. All I knew was like, hey, give me the ball, let me get busy, and then, you feel me? That's how it always was at ULU. So when I got to Bama, it was just like, I don't know, it was like an adjustment, because they don't care, five-star, two-star, three-star, you can get an opportunity. And like, I was just like, I just thought everything was supposed to go like it wasn't usually. Like, I'm gonna get the ball, right. I'm gonna start, and not really understanding the fundamentals of the game. Mm-hmm. Like, gotta study, let it translate from the meetings to the field. Mm-hmm. Know the ins and outs of the game, not just running the ball. Yeah. Pass protection, knowing defenses and doing all that, really being locked in, because I thought it was just football, you go home, have fun, come back, and do all that. But it's more to it, it's a job, and that's how you gotta approach it, because Coach Saban was running the program just like the NFL. Mm-hmm. And it took me a little while to understand that, but once, you know, I got a grip of it, then I was like, okay, I got it. Because my running backs coach, Coach Burns, he was patient with me, because I was
Louisiana guy.
Yeah. He helped me a lot, man. And you know, that's my dog, man.
Did your family play any part in you staying? Because I know, like when I was in school, my first real time of having adversity was I got hurt in training camp, and so the first away game they didn't take me. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, I've been telling girls the whole summer I play football.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's the first away game. I'm on campus with them. You know what I mean? I remember calling my mom. I had to use a calling card, you know, because we have cell phones. I used the calling card. I remember calling my mom and just being like, Mom, I don't know. Like, I'd rather just go to Tulane. At least if they're gonna leave me on campus, I could get home. Was there any time you talked to your family where they had to help you through that? Because you mentioned just how close you guys were, how everybody pitched in to make sure you were good.
Yeah, that's so funny. I'm gonna piggyback off of talking about Coach Burns. He came and see me in high school. You know, at the time I was, you know, T. Rich was going crazy at Bama, so I wanted to have a question about every running back. And in high school, like, I always get pulled out of class, and every time I got pulled out of class, I was like, oh, it's a college here, so I'm good. I ain't got to worry about it. I'm good. So well, he came and visited me, and I always do my visit with coaches in my my head coach office back in high school, and we talked for, like, hours, and I was, like, asked about T. Rich, asked about Mark Ingram, Eddie Lacy. And once I got there, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm finna. As soon as I get there on campus, I end up graduating high school early and enroll early. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm finna be starting. I'm thinking, so when I got into practice, I'm getting pow, pow. I'm like, why ain't Trent? Why ain't, like, Mark? Like, what's going on? Like, you know, it was hard for me to understand. But, like, as the season went on and, you know, us finally in the program, because I got there with Alvin, man. Alvin came in at the same time. Altie Tenpenny, who ended up passing away my last year at Bama in, like, October. And Tyron Jones, I came in there with Reuben Foster. So we had a deep class. And TJ was already there. Yeah. Kenyon Drake was already there. Justin Fowler was already there. So we was deep. Like, we had, like, eight running backs. The whole room was deep with seats. And then when we got out to practice, you gonna be happy you get a rep, or where you at in the depth chart, you might not get no reps. A matter of me understanding that, like, in adverse situations, it's not about making excuses. It's about how you get through it. So my family really just let me handle it on my own.
Oh, good.
I would call and complain and vent, but, like, you ain't coming home, so I don't know what you thinking.
Right.
But at the time, I was like how these kids do now. They go to one school and leave. Mm-hmm. I was really thinking about going to Florida State. It really came. I was almost close to leaving, going to Florida State. But me and Coach Saban had to talk, and then I eventually ended up staying, and everything worked out.
What did he say to you when y'all had that conversation?
He was like, "It's a process." Like, he was like, "You come from a small town. Being in high school, you the man." You know, and you like Superman, you know, for your team, and it's more to football than just handing you the ball and telling Derek, just go score. You know, you gotta know the fundamentals about the game, you know, and it's just more to it than just handing you the ball and letting you run. And I ain't really understand that, because all I want to see is you run the ball, or somebody else run the ball, not understanding the ins and outs of the game. So it took me a little time to, you know, go through the whole process and really understand and really get a grips of everything and, you know, and what I need to do to get better, honestly, because I thought my shit ain't stink, and that motherfucker was thinking up the whole goddamn spot. I appreciate that, because it helped me grow a lot. And we had our final conversation about everything, because I was still indecisive. It was like the night before we played Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl. It was my freshman year. Mm-hmm. And Coach Saban was like, because that whole week before we was practicing Tuscaloosa, then we came to New Orleans, I was like going in with the ones. So my eyes got big. I'm like, dang, I'm finna play. So I didn't really know. I thought he was just like prepping me, you know, for the near future. And then he set me down. He was like, hey, you know, I need to know, are you staying or are you leaving? It's like, if you stay, you're gonna play. If not, then I mean, there's nothing I can do. It's out of my hands. Mm-hmm. And I was like, shit, you gonna play, but I'm gonna stay. And he was like, all right. And then I ended up playing, and
went
I think
crazy.
I had like 100 and something yards.
Crazy.
And like, someone carries, and I had like a 62-yard reception, and ended up having a great game. And then, you know, the rest was, I was straight there. I was like, I'm staying.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, D, but speak on Saban, he drafted me to the Dolphins.
I remember hearing something about
you
that.
Heard
yeah.
it. So he drafted me to the Dolphins. I played, he was at LSU. I went crazy when LSU won the national championship that year, but they were 12-1. Florida ended up beating them, and I went nuts in the game.
Yeah.
I balled out. That was when Skylar, what's his name? Skylar something, some little bit.
Skylar Green.
That little damn return man, he hit one. So we did that. So Saban ended up letting me know, like, bro, I drafted you because of this game.
Man, that's crazy.
And he called me Gator. He didn't say, he never said Channing or Crowder for 2 years. He called me Gator because of the fact of that game, right? And like, speaking about Saban, I try to explain to people how Saban is. The thing that, the trigger that I know when I was with Saban, right, we had a bathroom in the Dolphin facility that was like a little duck-off bathroom where all the veterans know you can go in there and play on your phone and text your little girlfriends and all. But if the door opens and you look under the door and you see little white legs, you know it's a coach, and you leave. Yeah. If you see big black legs, you know it's a player, and you stay in there and keep playing on your phone. That was the rule. So
there's no little white leg players or big black leg coaches. White leg
player. Man, that fucking punter better kiss my ass. So I looked under the stall one day, bro, and I saw little white legs with those what's the Nike?
Monarchs.
Nike Monarchs.
Yeah,
the Nike Monarchs, coach shoe. So I looked under the door, bro. I saw little Nike Monarchs. So I finished texting, put it in my pocket, walked. There was Saban sitting there, and the bathroom was tight. So I'm washing my hands, and I'm looking over, and Saban's right there next to me. Mm-hmm. And I got to say something to him. I got to say something to the head coach of the team I'm playing on, bro. Yeah. So I was like, he always talks about Terry. Terry Saban, his wife. And Terry.
Miss Terry.
Miss Terry. Mm-hmm. So Miss Terry made us some cookies the year before. Yeah. And she ain't put enough sugar in them. Them fucking them, they were starchy cookies. But I ain't say nothing about that. But I'm like, if you ask a man about his wife, he's gonna say she's fine. So I'm washing my hands, Saban's right there. I'm washing my hands, I look over, and I say, hey coach, how's Terry? Bro, you know what his answer was? She'll be a lot better if you cover a fucking back on third down. The week before, I gave up a 3rd and 6 to a back out the backfield, and he got a first down. And they ain't even score on this drive. Yeah. But when that motherfucker looked at me, the only thing in his mind was, this bitch gave up a third down. This bitch gave up a first down on third down last week. Bro, hey, how you doing? Hey, how's Terry, coach? She'll be a lot better if you cover a fucking back on third down. And that's how his mind works. Yeah. That's my story. I would ask you, like, as people, they're so enamored with Nick Saban, like, what's it like playing for Nick Saban? Like, what, if you have a story or you have something like that Nick Saban? Because that's what I remember every time people ask me about Nick Saban.
That Bama documentary, whenever they do it, that bit gonna be crazy. That bit gonna be crazy. I'm telling you, it's gonna be crazy. It's different now because, like, the logistics of the NIL, and I think that's why I eventually figured that coach probably get out and retire because how it's going now is so crazy. But, like, whenever I was at Bama, how we was at Bama, that shit was hard. That shit was hard. Like, I'd be saying, it's so funny because, like through the years after I left, we'll call each other and be like, them boys will have on, like, Jordan sleeves and Nike bands. Damn, we ain't wearing that. Who was that? Bro, we had to wear compression sleeves. You know the compression sleeve you put on your leg, you heard it? To make it look like have some swag, have some drip on the field. Compression sleeve, you couldn't wear none of that. He wasn't having none of that. And if you did wear that shit, he'd call it whistling by the graveyard. You know what I mean?
You out here faking.
Yeah, like you acting like you're ready, but you really scared he'll call that. So he ain't hate, like if you wore that on pregame, let's say we're coming up, man, take that off. You don't need to wear all that. That's just how he was. And Bama was hard, man, from like the 4-quarter program. We'll be out there like you trace the rabbit. So whoever the rabbit, you know, as soon as you take off, you got to get up to him. If you ain't catch him, say, hey, start it over. We like, oh, man. My freshman year, man, we had the four-quarter program. I ain't know. I'm a freshman, so I'm trying to get out. I'm trying to get it. I'm trying to make my mark. And I'm out there running full speed, going crazy. Everybody like, man, slow down, man. I don't know, got M pass and stuff like that. As I got older, Tony Brown, we was doing Chase the Rabbit. He was a freshman. When we got to Chase the Rabbit, I'm like, Tony, bro. Do not take off
Tony
when we get to this cone. I said, Tony, don't take off when you get to this cone. Man, we jogging. Tony got to that cone. Well, we dog tired. Coach Saban seen that? I'm like, oh, man. Start it over. You know, he going in. You already know how he is. But that's just like a funny story. I mean, we got plenty of stories. I'll tell you a funny one. One time we was in the meetings, you know, because Sammy, he old school, couldn't stand if anybody scored and wanted to celebrate afterwards. So we in the meeting one day after the game, forgot who we played, and he pulling up film, he's showing everybody, then he told my aunt, you guys, you stop doing all that showboating, doing all that praying hands and acting like you thanking God. And then later on that night, 12 o'clock, you down there, got black and miles, got liquor, you're chasing him, like, well, get all that. And then, we were crying. We couldn't do nothing but laugh, because he was right. And so, like, you do your prayer here, you get on one knee. Then 12 o'clock comes, you down there smoking black and miles on the corner, drinking liquor, smoking, all this chasing girls. That shit, man, that shit was so funny, bro. I was like, bro,
he was tired of y'all.
Yeah, he was tired. He was out of us, bro.
You started the whole thing off by your decision to go to Alabama.
Yeah.
And you spoke about consistency. Florida didn't have that.
Yeah.
With the coaching staff that came in, they didn't have a foundation.
Yeah.
What you got out of Bama, which was the best decision, you got consistency and you got a foundation from the guy you just was talking about, mm-hmm. Coach Saban. He was always consistent. Mm-hmm. That's what made him great. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised when he announced his retirement? Because lately he's been talking about, well, it's the way the NIL has taken over the sport and things have changed. That's not consistent. That's not what he's used to.
Yeah.
And for him to make that statement, say, look, I can't do this no more, because all these young guys, all they think about is getting paid. They don't think about their development. That's what he helped you do, develop, and all your other teammates. Were you surprised when he decided to announce his retirement?
I was surprised, just because I always see Coach Saban going out on top, like winning national championship, and when they lost to Michigan, I mean, I was like, I think he'll come back, because he's been coaching for so long, and the stories we've been telling just sound
Coach
like...
Coach me at LSU.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He recruited me at Michigan
That's
State.
What I'm saying. So, like, all he knows is football, and I can't see him doing nothing else, which I know Coach Saban like to golf. But that's going back to when we were there. Like, it was just like how he ran his program. I knew eventually that it'll take its course, because like how the NIL, you know, all that work, mm-hmm. and these kids, like, they trying to get paid, yeah. Which I ain't mad at, because like, yeah, which I was playing whenever the NIL was, you know, yeah. what I'm saying, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying, in rotation, and shit, we were probably doing, you know what I'm saying, right. doing the same thing. It's just the way that Coach Saban run his program. He wants you to be able to, if it's not going the way you want it to go, he want to see you work for it, work through adversity, get through it, and then, you know, see what's on the other end of you being successful. Because, like, you know, a lot of these guys getting paid and making this money, they're expecting to come in and play. You know, they got paid, so yeah. they expecting to come in and play, and if it don't go their way, they like, we going somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah. And Coach Saban, he old school, so he ain't really used to that. And like, some of these questions these kids asking is like, how much you gonna give me? Yeah, that's what I'm right. saying.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like, for a guy who's been around you, it's like, and me, like, it's just a different thing to get used to, a different era. It's an era of football, really, in college football. But at the same time, you can't get mad at the players, because, like, you know, this opportunity is once in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And this is life-changing for their families and, you know, for them as well. But at the same time, it still got to have some integrity for the game.
Correct.
You know, rather than just quitting and going somewhere else because it didn't work out. And I think that's the thing Coach Saban struggled with, is like, where the integrity of the game at? Yeah, you're going to get paid, but are you going to work for it? Are you going to go out there and earn it, rather than just wanting to check and then be happy with whatever result you get?
Right.
And then if it don't go, move on to the next thing.
He mentioned the consistency of Alabama. Under Coach Saban, it's not only been consistent, it's been a level of excellence that is unmatched in the history of college football. And especially at your position, Mark Ingram winning mm-hmm. the Heisman. You've won the Heisman. All the first-round draft picks mm-hmm. from the position. You broke Sean Alexander's Alabama rushing record. Mm-hmm. And you've now broken Sean Alexander's Alabama NFL rushing record. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, are you the best running back that played at Alabama?
Damn,
I can answer that.
I wouldn't say. I just felt like I made my mark when I had the opportunity, because when I came in, you know, I didn't play my first year. And then my second year, it wasn't, I mean, it was all right. Like, it was I would say it was mediocre. I didn't have, like, a year I had the next year. And I feel like Sean, he laid the foundation for running backs, even Bobby Humphrey. I can go on and on about the Alabama running backs. And I always say Sean the greatest because his body of work and what he did. And he didn't have, you know, what we had at Bama and, you know, that whole era with Coach Saban and, you know, the guys he brought in and first round picks. I mean, it's just crazy. So I'll always say Sean is the greatest Alabama running back of all time. And Mark is the best in the same Saban era because he started. That's who it started off with. And, you know, he the first one to win the Heisman and really, you know, set it off for the running back. So I'll just say I made my mark and let the people decide.
Oh, stop. The rest. Hey, man, don't come on here. Come on here. All this fake you, all this modesty.
I knew this question would come up at some point, and I was like, how am I answering it?
Because
I feel like Najee is in that conversation too. Because like,
do you know why you knew if the question was gonna come up? Here's what's never gonna happen. I'm never gonna walk into an interview thinking, man, how am I gonna answer the question, am I the greatest Steeler? You know why? Because ain't nobody ever going to ask me that. But when you go in and there's a thought in your head, I might be the best running back in Alabama history.
Who the best?
I'm going to have to answer this question.
Who the best?
Toting the rock at Alabama.
Who y'all think the best? Who you think the best?
Nigga, you!
We are the people.
The numbers say it. The leading rusher in college.
I'm being real.
The leader in the league. Derek, it's the numbers.
Bruh.
You ain't played but 8 years in the league.
I'm saying like this. Not with the league included. I'm saying college though. Who y'all think the best running back at Alabama? Honestly, being real.
For me, I think when you look at pound for pound, you look at how you attack defenses. You guys had a lot of great running backs. The way I would always kind of view my running backs at Bama, you were a big guy. You have the most amazing jump cut. Like, your jump cut's so solid. I'm glad Coach Saban did not put you at D, and I didn't think he would because of that. But I think you, my opinion, you are the best Bama running back, and not just being biased from Florida. Just looking at the skill set, the big guy to move like that, which is crazy.
I'm going to say this. You're the greatest Alabama running back of the modern era. That is my full opinion. Now, cutting on the film, or sitting at my house as an LSU fan, the running back from Alabama that I thought was the scariest was Trent Richardson. That is my
Richardson was
when he ran the ball at Alabama.
He's a reason why, big reason why I went to Bama because of him.
Trent was a dog.
Like Trent made people like you made people quit. Like I felt like I would always say when you ran the ball in college, and I said this about Trent first though, I was like at some point. 18 and 19 year olds are going to get tired of trying to tackle them. And you would see it every game, right? They'd start out and they'd be fired up. They might stop y'all one or two times. And then eventually it'd be like, okay, I've had enough. Mm-hmm. And I thought Trent was the first one I saw do that to LSU for sure. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you came in and did the exact same thing. I know we've been talking about Alabama a lot, you know, but we are here in this place because of who you were in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You grabbed the microphone in your last game and you thank Tennessee fans for the greatest 8 years of your life. Like, I identify with Pittsburgh like that now, but I wasn't drafted to Pittsburgh. I didn't set records in Pittsburgh. I didn't do some of the things that you did in Tennessee. How hard was it to come to the realization that your Tennessee Titans career was over?
Yeah, it was hard because my last 2 years, it just didn't go well. And then when you've been in an organization that long and you know, played a big role of trying to turn it around from the previous years, and then going out the year before, I think we lost like 7 straight, and then this year being 6-11, you know, I was playing in the back of my mind, like, dang, I'm going out like this, like, I always pictured it in and better than what it did, because what we did in the previous years, but we could just never get back to that point. And I still had hope that we'll get back to that point, but it never just worked out. So like, in the whole aspect of it, when I knew it was coming to an end, and I did that speech, I was like, I'm gonna speak for the heart, because this could be really my last, you know, time talking to the fans. And, you know, I still think about that to this day. I'm like, dang, it's like, I ain't, you know, you don't want to go out like, you know, somewhere you've been for so long and, you spent your whole career there. You just wish it was a better ending than what it was.
Derek, you know, you guys made it to the AFC chip. And the thing I remember most about it, you went absolutely crazy that year. The thing I remember most was late in the game against Kansas City, you on the sideline in a jacket, mm-hmm. right? And it's like, okay, this is the best running back in football. His team's trying to make it to the Super Bowl. And because they're down, he's not on the field. Mm-hmm. Part of sort of the devaluing mm-hmm. of the running back position is that, mm-hmm. right? Because that's very similar to LaDainian Tomlinson, who we had on the show as well, to when LT's in the AFC Championship, his knees hurt. And he has on the coat, he has on the helmet. Mm-hmm. How important is it for you now in Baltimore to help Lamar, who has been on the cusp as you were, mm-hmm. John Harbaugh, who has already won a championship, Roquan and that defense? How important is it for you in your career to win a championship?
It's really important, and I'm happy I'm going somewhere that they're hungry. They hungry for it, and they're right on the cusp. You know, they're always in the conversation. And I know Lamar want one really bad. So I ain't going to somewhere that, like, the expectation is just we're going to see what's going to happen. Let's make the playoffs and try to make some noise. No, they trying to win it. Mm-hmm. And being so close and losing that game in Kansas City, I know they're hungry. I know, you know, they're going to come in with the right mindset and let's get to it. So I'm ready to come in and be that adding piece to it to help spring them forward if any way possible, any way I can, and helping him and, you know, taking some of the, you know what I'm saying, the pressure off him in any way. And, you know, the big thing is being around some dogs. Yep. So I'm excited for the opportunity. And another big reason why I played a big part is the last time the Ravens won the Super Bowl, it was in New Orleans. And the Super Bowl is in New Orleans this year. So. Hopefully this shit come full circle. We're gonna see what's happening.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I like it, bro. And I know we're going to end. I know we got my last one, bro. I got to ask, because you're a part of all the memes. When you be punishing them damn secondary safeties and corners, yeah. do you yell, whatever, what do you think? Because all the whole, I the run game with you would be to get you on the defensive back because they can't tackle your big ass. You big as hell. Mm-hmm. When you break that and see a safety come off the edge, like, what? How does your mind work when it's like?
Stiff arm, like when I...
No, your stiff arm, but like when you know the scheme has worked and it's a... Yeah. It's a 175-pound dude coming to tackle you.
Bro, you know what's so funny? It's like, if the scheme work and I'm in the open field one-on-one, I'll be looking at the end zone. I don't even be like, it is what it is at that point.
Yeah, you little bitty.
Every time, and I stand on TV. I already stand on TV.
He did,
when he get back there by the DBs, his whole demeanor changed.
I know, like,
this humble guy who's sitting here, that's who runs when he from the line of scrimmage to 3 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Once he break that,
numbers, and pass 4 yards down the field, he turned into a whole different person.
But I'm saying,
more humility, ain't no more, I'm just trying to read the holes. That's when he's stiff-arming people.
He be punishing y'all ass.
Yeah, because
punishing y'all ass.
You mean like if I'm like getting through the line of scrimmage, like my mindset is like,
I'm just trying to get through, you know. I'm trying to make I just want to make a play. I want to do the right thing. Now,
and then he breaks.
When he get back there by the DBs, he on demon time. Yeah, like now.
but that's how it's set up though. The offense though, that's how it's set up though. It's not really like, unless it's like a downhill run where we just like, we're gonna get what we can, and then, you know what I'm saying, just keep running down their throats until they finally tap out. But like in the zone scheme, it's really about manipulating the defense. You feel me? Like setting your linebackers up.
You know that.
Setting the linebackers up on the offensive linemen, because sometimes they don't come off, and you got to be able to, you feel me, move or make it easy for them to get where you want to go. But and that's what I love about the zone schemes. I'm like, this should be fun, because, like, I'm hauling ass, and you feel me? So, I see one cut.
Okay, yeah. I got a question then.
What about when he runs up on you? What about when you break and he runs up
in
on you?
In the hole, I win.
Huh?
And, like, if we do it
in
quick,
the hole.
If I'm the
RC,
eighth man in the box.
RC, if you run up on Derek.
He's tackled. 100%.
Ryan.
We're talking about soon Ryan. If he gets
so you said, Ryan. So you're saying, like, if I get the ball and we meet, right? Like
in the hole. Right?
So Derrick Henry in the eye, right?
Okay.
I'm the eighth.
You're the eighth, okay.
Right? He pushing front side, right? He cuts it back and it's just me and him.
And
you can't go nowhere else. Derrick Henry is tackled.
Like
100%.
If I cut back and you right there away,
yes.
In the hole?
If it's front side.
And it's me and you.
Me? Yes, Derek. Who else is in here to play defense under the chain?
You fighting for your life.
I'm not fighting for my
life. It's not going to be right. I can say, like, if you like, it's an eight-man box and you shoot the gap, like, we running, like, downhill. You got down.
No, Derek.
You feel me?
And,
like, you right there.
You see me. That's what I'm talking about. He can see me.
Like, if I cut back and it's me and you one-on-one.
So, Derek, see you. You see him coming and he sees you and y'all look at each other.
He is tackled. 10 out of 10 times.
On the cutback.
Yes. Unless he, like you're talking about, he's just going to run straight into the hole.
Ryan,
he might make me miss.
Are you saying, you saying you sitting in the hole?
I'm saying I'm coming
down. Halfway in the backfield.
No, what I'm saying is I'm rotating into the box.
Okay, you're rotating into the box.
Derrick Henry gets the football.
He can be front side. Cuts back to the B gap.
It can be front side, cut back, whatever it is.
Cuts back to the B gap.
If there is a tunnel and it's me and Derrick Henry, Derrick Henry's tackled. 10 out of 10 times.
Bullshit. Let me jump in for two
Bullshit.
Seconds.
Let me jump in.
I'll give him a little credit. It depends on, like, if the whole,
if he can maneuver, it's different.
Don't be nice.
Look, I'm going to say it like this. And there's video, is proof out there. Michael Caputo. Y'all know who that is?
No.
It's the safety from Wisconsin. When he was at Alabama, Mike ran down, same scenario, in the hole. First quarter, a minute into the game versus Bama. Mike left that game with a concussion. His ass was on the floor sleeping for 2 seconds.
I never said I wasn't gonna be sleeping.
He's sick. No, but you played violent. But I'm saying, like, if it was like a, it depend. I would be realistic. If it's like the depending on like if
they
moving him off the ball and we got
you feel
me? One on one. If it's
better.
Me and him,
I feel.
But like, if he come down this the hole condensed, then he probably make the tackle.
Thank you.
But if I got a little space to work with,
I agree.
I'm gonna run the fuck over.
I do have one question for you, and it goes back to my first question about your grandmother, though, man, because. You, towards, you know, some of the best moments of your life in the end, you had to pass notes to your grandmother to communicate.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because she wasn't able to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And you wrote on those notes, and she wrote back just how proud of you she was, and you just got an opportunity to tell her how much, you know, you love her. But you were in camp, I guess, when she passed. Having her, having been so much a part of your life to where you're still talking about her at pressers now when you sign. How difficult was that time for you, being she was all of, your grandmother was all of those things to you as a young man?
Oh, yeah, was real hard. Coming off that year, I won the Heisman, national champion. And then, you know, I was so hard on myself about not going in the first round, because I wanted to be like them. And like all the great running backs I've known have gone in the first round and made a big impact. So then when I went in the second round, I was down to myself. And then whenever I got to Tennessee, I wasn't starting. I was behind DeMarco. And then it was just like, man, like, I just felt like, you know, I don't know, I was just like real, like, it was just a dark time for me. And then having her pass, I'm just like, It was bad. It was bad for me. I was in a bad place, and it was just a rough time. And I remember the day she passed, my grandma, when I was little, just always pinched me. always pinched me. That was just her thing. And the day she passed, I mean, I was me and my girl was asleep, and I'm sleeping in bed, and I'm like, I feel something pinch me. So I'm like, look at my girl, I'm like, you pinching me? And she like, nah. And I'm like, oh man. And that just to show you, like, even though they're not here physically, their spirit is still around. And I feel like my grandmother, she's always around. I always see things that remind me of her, the butterflies. And, you know, sometimes you can feel on your loved one's presence that's been gone. But yeah, going back to that in 2016, that was a dark time. But I feel like that molded me into the person I am today, being a young dude in the NFL, trying to figure out his way through life. And then, you know, as a player, just fighting through adversity, having dark times, and knowing that shit, no matter what, shit, just keep your faith strong and keep working. And I got my family leaning on as well, so everything was straight.
I'm glad we had an opportunity to do this, obviously.
Yeah, I'm fired up.
I'm a huge, huge fan of yours. Of you on and off the field. I love how you carry yourself. I didn't realize we had so much in common. Mug City, 16,000 people, Yulee.
14, I actually 15, went out there one time. I was like, "Ooh, I thought Yulee was country boy."
Yeah.
Out there.
The Muck.
It's a different.
The Muck is different.
It's different.
But it shaped me to help me become the person I am. Playing running back, birthed by young parents. My mom was around 16, 17, same age. Having that relationship with my grandmother, mm-hmm. you know, being homesick. When I left to go to Florida, we both cried.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck. So, but she said, you ain't coming back home.
Yeah.
Come bring your ass back home. But no, I do admire you for a whole lot of reasons. But we always ask our guests, what's their biggest pivot, right? It's that one moment you can look back on and say, this is the moment that impacted me the most, that it helped me become the person that we all see here right now.
I would say in 2018, 16 and 17, I was behind DeMarco Murray. And, you know, when you're young, you think you should be playing, be like, man, I should be the starter. And then 18 turned around, and I get a chance to start. And that whole offseason, my approach wasn't what it needed to be. And we had a whole new coaching staff and a whole new offense. And going back to when I got to Bama, thinking everything was just going to fall in my hands. I don't need to do what I need to do to prepare like a starter and take my job serious like I need to. And then when that season came, it showed. I was struggling. I wasn't running hard. Wasn't really having no impact. And then I ended up getting bench, mm-hmm. and Deion Lewis ended up taking over. Shit, yeah. Damn near, shit, almost through that year, shit, on the birds getting cut, because I wasn't doing nothing. I wasn't making no impact. I remember calling my agent after one game, I forgot what game it was, and I was like, shit, they gonna cut me, because I ain't even playing, you feel me? Like, you know, when they're writing on the wall. I remember one day at practice, I used to see one butterfly, but I saw multiple butterflies, and it was just like a reminder. It's like, she used to always tell me when I was little, like get your lesson. Like, football gonna be there, but make sure you get your lesson.
Right.
And I would just open the eye for me. Just like, I was just like, man, I'm tripping. I gotta get to it. So whenever I got benched, you know, I got quiet, but I was like still working. And I told myself, I was like, man, if I get another opportunity, no matter if I'm second, third string, I'm gonna go in there and go run it and just stop thinking and go play like myself. And ever since, like, well, after that happened, I remember it was a game we played the Colts and we was getting whooped. And I got in, you know, when you get whooped, like, hey, Derek, go in. It's like 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I'm like, man. But I was like, forget it. I'm going. I'm gonna do my thing. And I end up running the ball pretty well. And Ray was like, man, you can get some more opportunities. And then week after week, I just start, you know, building my confidence and, you know, just embracing my role. And until that Jaguar game came, mm-hmm. and I was mm-hmm. just like, if I get an opportunity tonight, we on prime time, like, it's up. I'm going crazy.
That the 99-yarder?
Yeah, the 99-yard run. Mm-hmm. After that game, I don't know, it just, like, something changed, something just clicked. Mm-hmm. And I would probably say that was the the pivot moment for me, because without that happening in my life, ain't no telling where my career would have went. And I feel like that really impacted me to get where I am today and success that I had in my career and being able to be where I'm at now. So
I guess the last question would be, if you could write your grandmother a letter today where you are, what would it say?
So thank you for everything that she's taught me throughout my life. I still use it to this day, being 30 years old. And I know, I'm young, and it was just, she talking to me and, just raising me and having conversation. But those conversations turned into life lessons that I kept with me since I was a little boy. And any point in my life that, I had some cloudiness, I'll fall back on the conversations that we always had. And that helped me get through it. Her hard work that she instilled in every single one of us in my family, because I got a big family, and all her kids, that's still intact to this day, and it has domino affected to every single one of her children's kids and her children's great kids and me as well. And everything that she instilled to me, I'm going to instill in my kids as well. That's awesome. And just thank her for her sacrifice and everything that she's done in my life. And I'm gonna continue to do what I gotta do to make her proud and be able to provide for the family.
We need a Prince Henry around here.
That makes babies.
I love it. I appreciate you, bro.
Blessings,
man. No, that's gonna be scary. This right here, though?
My God.
This here? What this end, gotta figure out which one to take.
Hey, look, bro. For sure.
All too.
How long y'all here?
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On this vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up.